A Company of Swans by Eva Ibbotson. Read by Adjoa Ando. There was no lovelier view in England. Harriet knew this. To her right, the soaring towers of King's College Chapel and the immaculate lawn sloping down to the river's edge. To her left, the blue and gold of the scillas and daffodils splashed in rich abundance between the trees of the fellows' gardens. Yet, as she leaned over the stone parapet of the bridge on which she stood, her face was pensive, and her feet, and this was unusual in the daughter of a professor of classics in the year 1912, were folded in the fifth position. A thin girl, brown-haired and brown-eyed, she was a familiar figure to passers-by, Professor Morton's clever daughter, Miss Morton's biddable niece. To grow up in Cambridge was to be fortunate indeed. To be able to look at this marvellous city each day was a blessing of which one should never tire, Harriet told herself. But it isn't cities which make the destinies of 18-year-old girls, it's people. And as she gazed at the lazy, muddy river and thought of her future, her eyes held a look devoid of happiness and hope. Professor Morton was already in his 40s when, at a reading party in Switzerland, he met an English girl working as a governess to the children of a Swiss industrialist. Sophie Brent was enchanting, with big brown eyes, dark gold hair, and a beguiling chuckle. She was an orphan, poor and unprotected, and deeply impressed by the attentions of the serious, stern professor. They married and returned to Cambridge, where the professor's elder sister Louisa kept house for him. 37 Croup Terrace was a house where waste not, want not was the motto, though the professor had a substantial private income in addition to his salary. In this cold, dark house, the professor's passion for his young wife soon cooled as it became clear that Sophie would be no use to him in his career. It was into this house that Harriet was born. There are babies who appear to have swallowed some small private sun, babies who explode into laughter long before one's hand actually tickles their stomachs. Such a baby was Harriet Jane Morton. Then Sophie, whose passion the child had been, caught a chill which turned to pneumonia and died. Within months, the plump, rosy baby became a serious, bird-thin, and almost silent little girl. Yet it would be wrong to say that Harriet was neglected. Louisa was determined to do her duty. Harriet was conveyed to music lessons and to dancing classes, and presently she was sent to an excellent day school. No child ever loved school as much as Harriet. Arithmetic, sago pudding, deportment. She enjoyed everything, because there it was shared by others and accompanied by laughter. Then a new headmistress came, detected in the vulnerable dark-eyed child a potential scholar, and sent for Professor Morton to discuss Harriet's university career. To the professor, it was incomprehensible that anyone could live in Cambridge and not know his views on women in the university. And, unable to trust his daughter to this suffragette upstart, he took Harriet away from school. In her dealings with her niece, Louisa had one unfailing source of guidance, the ladies of the Trumpington Tea Circle. It was these ladies, headed by Mrs. Belper, Louisa's special friend, who suggested that the best solution for Harriet might be an early marriage. Seeing the sense of this, the Mortons selected Edward Finch Dutton, a fellow of the professor's own college, St. Philip's. Though his subject was zoology, he was sensible and ambitious, and his mother, a Fanshawe, had been accustomed to visit Staveley, the district's most beautiful and prestigious home. It was the long, serious face of this excellent young man that Harriet saw now as she looked into the water beneath the bridge, and as always, his image brought a stab of fear. "Don't let me give in, God," she begged. "Don't let me marry Edward just to get away from home.